Warning: The Mended Futures podcast contains stories told by guests that may be sensitive to some people. Viewer and listener discretion is advised. The opinions expressed by guests do not reflect the views of the hosts and/or producers of this podcast.
Today, you will have the pleasure of meeting and hearing Deb Lester's story from educator to more of a community leader position professionally, and also her personal experience of leading a local women's ministry.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she had some great advice for people in ministry, people who are just looking to get involved in their church or their community. And she's just a very warm, welcoming person to listen to. So we hope you enjoy.
Allison, do you want to introduce our guest today since you almost ran her over in the parking lot?
She almost ran me over.
I did. In the parking lot. On two wheels.
Yes. I was on a coffee run and I was making it back in time for this episode. And Deb Lester was pulling into the parking lot. So
I did.
It was serendipity.
It was.
Yes.
It was a sweet little surprise when I turned the corner on Goldenrod.
Yes. So, who are you? And when we ask the who are you, we mean personally, professionally, whatever you want to tell the guest.
Well, I would say I'm a friend of Allison's. Mm-hmm. I have been a longtime educator in Campbell County for more than 20 years. Professionally speaking, currently I've transitioned from K-12 to Virginia Cooperative Extension through Virginia Tech. And so I'm the 4-H agent in Amherst County, which has been a great transition. But more importantly than that, personally, I would say I am, how would I describe myself? I'm a daughter of the King. Mm-hmm. Married a long time to my husband. God bless him. He's put up with a lot with me, Ken. And we have 3 kids and we have 7 grandchildren.
Wow.
And so life is full and really, really good.
And they call you what?
So Gigi. I'm Gigi.
Your mom. Your Mrs. Lester to thousands
yes.
of kids.
Yes.
You're Gigi. So yeah. You wear lots of hats.
I do. I do.
And you two met in the education space?
We were colleagues.
Mm-hmm. We were colleagues.
Educationally.
Yep. Yeah.
And then Deb is best friends with one of my husband's aunts.
Mm-hmm. So lots of good connections.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
And your daughter was working in the baby house
yes.
when my daughter was a baby. So
yes.
we've got lots of connections.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good connections.
Yes.
Yeah. This is sort of a random start, but we were talking a little bit about you at lunch today just because we were like, who's your next
guest? I was hoping you were going to bring this up.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
So
yes. Allison mentioned that you were working with 4-H, and everyone was like, oh, does she love horses?
Oh.
Because every single one of us didn't know that 4-H extended beyond
the animals.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I know.
So
people say that
explain,
all the time. Yes.
Yeah.
People say that all the time, especially when I took this job. The people who know me
what
and
do you
love
know about
me,
horses?
Yeah. Nothing. God created them.
Right.
And he said it was good. When I took this job, people were like, so Deb, so you don't do anything like outdoorsy, like with animals at all.
Right.
So what are you doing with 4-H? So you're not a farm girl. And I was like, you don't have to be a farm girl to do 4-H. Mm-hmm. But that is part, animal science is part of 4-H. But in the big picture, it's really about positive youth development. And so those are the tools, the programs, the methods, or the avenues that we use to reach, you know, youth ages 5 to 19. But it's not the only way. So I will tell you the best stories in the past year. I've been there like 15 months now, 16 months, have been stories relating to me having to do stuff with animals.
No way.
So my first...
Having to do
things with animals. So yeah. My first experience at the livestock show where there's, you know, hogs and cattle, like cows and sheep. And yeah. So I said, I'm going to come and I'm going to do whatever you want me to do. And so they thought,
other duties as a sign.
Other duties as a sign. And so because I have a 4-H club, I have a livestock club. And so they were all, and they show their animals in these livestock shows. And so I didn't know what to expect. But as a 4-H agent, I'm going to support my people. So I get there to the show and I'm like, what do you want me to do? And they're like, well, you can do the gate for the hogs. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? They're like, well, you're going to open and close the gate to let the hogs in for the for them to show them. And I was like, okay. And they're like, and I said, do they? Can they bite you?
Do they bite?
Do they bite? And they're like, yes. Oh yes, they can bite you. And I was like, okay. And then they said, you know, if you fall down in a pig pen, like, they'll eat you in, like, 8 minutes. And I said...
They told you that?
Yes. And I was like,
haven't you all seen The Wizard of Oz?
Not recently.
Well, go back and watch
I
that part.
I didn't remember that part.
Yeah.
But when they told me that they bite, I was a little nervous. But then I was like, you know what? Nobody believes I can do it, and I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And so I did. I ran that gate the whole time with those hogs.
Did you get bit?
Did not get bit. No, didn't get bit. But it was a little scary. And sometimes they use these big boards to, like, block them to keep them running where they're supposed to run.
So can you say what you always say when I've done something really brave?
You're so strong and brave.
I love it. I felt strong and brave after the hogs. But I've learned so much about things that I never thought that I would, you know, have experience with. And so it has, it's been really fun. So what do I know about horses? Not a lot, but I have a horse club. And so I went to the state horse show and supported them and watched them do the, you know, the jumping and all sorts of neat things. And we just did our horse bowl, which is like a trivia bowl, and they do hippology, so all things about horses. And so we actually sponsored that show, and the kids compete. It's really fun. They know a ton of stuff. Equine therapy is really, really big, and it is significant in its impact with people with trauma. And they use that therapy out at Valor Farms in Alta Vista. Horses are just magnificent animals, and the fact that that animal is used for therapy is really amazing. How God created those animals and the just the peace of those animals and how they interact with you. It's really kind of neat. So
they
I've learned a lot.
So much responsibility.
Yes, yes, a lot of responsibility.
So you're learning a lot about things that you didn't know.
Yeah, definitely.
I always think of camp when I think of 4-H. So is camp a part of what you do?
It is. So we have our summer camp. Our summer camp is 1 week in the summer, and we camp at Holiday Lake in Appomattox. So if you think about Disney movies where the kids are at summer camp, that it's quintessential summer camp. That's what Holiday Lake is like. Okay. So we go for 1 week. We leave on Monday morning, come back Friday afternoon.
And you go.
And I go. So I went for the first time last summer. Mind you, I've never, ever gone to summer camp as a child ever in my entire life.
I could believe that. Like, never, thinking about Deb Lester at summer camp is almost comical to me.
It was so fun.
Did you love it?
I loved it. I did everything with the kids. So we camp by ourselves. Other counties cluster camp so that you might have like three or four counties at one time. We take enough kids, we go by ourselves.
I didn't know that. When I went, we went with Fluvanna.
Okay. Did you go through Campbell?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Amherst camps by ourselves. So we had like
exclusive.
We had over, 225 kids. Oof. And so
how many staff members oversee those kids?
They have staff there.
Right, right, okay.
I took 34.
Who's watching these children?
Who's taking care of these kids? They're fine. It's all good.
It's okay.
Right. I took 34 teen counselors and we had 17 adults. And a lot of these adults take a week vacation and they go and they help at camp. And so it's a huge blessing. But my teen counselors are the real heroes there. They are the ones that shepherd these kids throughout the week. They are sleeping in the cabins with them and caring for them, helping with classes that we do. And so we went for the whole week. And so, of course, my family thought this was also hilarious. You know, mm-hmm. animals in camp, hot, sweaty, dirty. Mm-hmm. Deb Lester isn't going to do this, but I did it and loved it. And came back just sort of like this new, it was very energizing, mm-hmm. you know, to see that there's other things that I can do to reach kids mm-hmm. and to really impact them in a positive way. It was just a really good turning point for me. But I did all the things, y'all. I learned how to shoot bow and arrow. So I did archery.
Nice.
And I went to the shooting range and shot a gun. And I did kayaking and just all the mm-hmm. stuff that you do at camp. It was really fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
So you kind of just touched on a question that we wanted to ask you. Mm-hmm. What was it like transitioning from 20 plus years mm-hmm. as a K-12 classroom teacher to not being a classroom teacher yeah. and more of a community leadership role? What yeah. was that like?
Were you a classroom teacher all 20 plus years?
Uh-huh, I wow. was, yeah.
That's amazing.
I went back to school too, y'all. I was older, so I was an older student. I went back to school when I was 30 to get my degree, and my husband did too. That's how we ended up in Lynchburg. Mm-hmm. We sold our house, packed up our kids. They were 6, 5, and 18 months. Mm. When we moved here.
I didn't know that.
I did. And we went to Liberty University full time mm-hmm. and graduated in 5 years with as parents. Mm-hmm. And so of 3 little kids.
Yeah.
So
it so was, you can do it, folks. If you're
you
listening.
You can do it. You can do it. I was 35 when I graduated and started my career in
and
teaching.
There was no online anything.
Nothing
then.
Online.
So you were doing it mm-hmm. in person.
In person. I did. And so student teaching, the whole thing. And so my career really, you know, I was strongly rooted in my community. I was in the Brookville School District that whole entire time. Even my student teaching I did in the Brookville School District. And so making that change and leaving the classroom was really, really big because I had raised my kids in the Brookville District. I taught in the district, really, really deeply rooted. And so post-pandemic, I just really, you know, I was like, things are different in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted just a different challenge and to do some different things, but I didn't want to lose the ability to impact youth because that's one of my passions. And so this opportunity opened, I took it. And at first it was really hard because I really missed being in the classroom with my kids every day and having that relationship with them because that was really important to me. But then this new job offers me the opportunity to expand that impact so I can work with kids 5 to 19. So I'm in elementary classrooms now. I'm working with middle school in leadership, with the leadership clubs. I'm working with the high schoolers, with my teen leadership club. I work community-wide with an intergenerational mentoring program that we're doing. So I'm really my education path has just gone from K-12 to I just consider it community education.
Mm-hmm. You've kind of zoomed out.
Yeah. So instead of like focusing in, I've zoomed out. And so I broadened my reach with that. So it was hard. You know, Brookville, those are my people, my family. So that was really hard. I went from being in a building with 1,000 people to an office with 5 of us. Mm. And so that was really hard. It was very quiet. Mm-hmm. And that was hard for me to get used to that quiet because, you know, in a school, it's never quiet
right.
unless you have a lockdown. Mm-hmm. but I started I went from a 12-minute commute to a 30-minute commute. Mm. And so there were adjustments I didn't think that I would have that I mm-hmm. was like, oh, this
you
is.
You traded some things.
I traded some things. But I think that I remember Alice and I had met downtown at White Hart, and we mm-hmm. were chatting, and she said, you know, it's going to take you some time to really process coming out of the classroom.
Mm-hmm. And kind of grieve it.
And grieve it, because I was grieving it. And also, like, come down off of this like stress level that you live at a constant 10 and you come down here, it's going to take months and months. And I was thinking, I don't know how long it'll really take. And she was almost exactly right that it was close to a year before I really was like, oh, I'm not living at these constant stress levels anymore. So the stress levels, stress is very different in this job. I don't have the stress that I had in the classroom, but I will tell you, I am a lot busier in this job. I do a lot more. I have a much broader scope of what I do.
Broader ripple.
Yes. Yeah. So it has been a wonderful transition. I've met a lot of wonderful people and making good relationships in Amherst County, which I think has been one of the biggest blessings for me, this change. So, yeah.
You have such a gift in making authentic relationships with people.
You.
And watching you as an educator, watching the swarm, you know, the Brookville students knew that you genuinely cared for them, cared for their families. And that's not something that you can just bottle and sell to other people. So that is definitely your gift.
Thank you. Thank you. I try to remember, you know, even as a young person, and I know that we'll talk about this, about, you know, mending futures, that even as a young person, you know, when my parents divorced when I was 14, it introduced a lot of upheaval in my life. And when I look back at my story, some of the significant people that really influenced me and put me on a path of making good decisions, you know, not harmful decisions, were teachers, were educators that took, you know, a personal, they invested their self in me and it made all the difference in the world for me. And I think that was one of the biggest things that influenced me to go into education was that was such a turning point for me at 14 and 15 years old. And I think that's why I can relate to those students and I understand the importance and the value of being real, being authentic with them, not saying things and not following through, but being there and being that safe place for them. And being that person that can say, you know, yeah, this does stink, but you have control over these things. And these are the things that you need to do for your own good. And so I think that was very influential for me, young person. So, yeah.
You lead a ministry called Lift.
I do.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Or do you still?
I do sort of. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I do. It looks a little different today. And that's because I really, there's been a lot of things that have happened and unfolded in my life in the last couple of years. And not to mention, you know, pandemic teaching, but also leading in and, you know, being in ministry during that time. I never took a break, never stepped away. We continued online, virtually, and then we rolled right into coming back into in person. But for 7 years, I was the primary teacher for Lift. And so this is a women's group that we meet at our church, Timberlake Church on Timberlake Road here. And it's a multi-generational group of women, which I think is really important in women's ministry, is that it's multi-generational. And for 7 years, I planned, I studied, I taught. And finally, I did that through my breast cancer journey even. I would take a few weeks off with my surgeries, and then I'd go right back to teaching. And during that time, I had, well, with the pandemic, I had started tapping into some women to kind of come on board with me as leaders so that we could break this group. It's a large group. We could have 50 women coming on Wednesday night. And so we needed to break into smaller groups during the pandemic. So I tapped into some of these women and said, I want you to be reaching out to these women weekly to make sure that they're okay, see what they need, and just maintain communication and touch with them. And so then when we came back, some of these women were still like those people that my go-to sisters. And then during my breast cancer journey, these were the women that I said, could you step in and teach for me when I'm out?
So you tapped women yes. who you thought had leadership potential.
Yes.
And you said, I need your help.
Yes, I need help. And so they were stepping in, teaching. Things continued the way that they always continued with Lyft. And then I got to the end of the year last year in the spring when we break for summer. And I told May, my best friend, I said, you know, I don't know what God's doing, but I'm burned out. I'm burned out. And I don't know what that looks like right now, but I know that I need a break. And maybe it's just the summer like I normally have, but I felt really, I just didn't feel settled. And so it was very, very busy. I had started this new job. There was a lot of training. I was traveling, really trying to keep up with trying to keep all the plates in the air. You know how that is as women. It's really hard. So I said, I don't know what this looks like, but we just need to pray about it. And so we get through. Coming into the summer. We're in the summer. And my pastor, Brad, sends me a message. And he's like, hey, can you meet for coffee? I'd love to catch up with you. And I always joke when he sends me messages like this, it makes me nervous. Like I'm in trouble. I'm getting called to the principal's office. And then I'm like, he's going to ask me to do something. And what if I don't want to do it, but God wants me to do it? You know, you get this wrestling going on. So I go and we meet for coffee and we're talking about all sorts of things. And he said, okay, well, so I want to ask you a question. I don't want you to say, you don't have to give me an answer today. I really want you to think about it and pray about it before you give me an answer. I said, okay. And he said, I want you to consider stepping out of Lyft for this year, like the school year, and joining my small group. I really want you to join us and I want you to do that. And he'd asked me before and I didn't do it. And so I looked at him when he said that to me. And before he even finished the sentence, in my head, I hear, yes. Mm. And I was like, oh, okay. And he said, is that, I want to give you ample time because I know you have to, there plans have to be made for Lyft. And I said, well, I'm not going to tell you no, because in my head, I heard yes.
Right.
And he's like, really? And I was like, I did. And I totally believe right now God's telling me this is what I'm supposed to do, but I don't know what that looks like, but I'm going to pray about it. And so I got with May and I said, I want to do this. I think this is what God was leading me to and what I need. And oh my gosh, you guys, it's the coolest thing because you can't, the whole thing unfolded after this conversation I had with Allison about being a gatekeeper.
And I think it's also mimicking or it's being mirrored in other ways in your life.
Yeah.
You've always, and I don't mean this in the bad way, you've been the sage on the stage.
Yeah.
And you've tapped into leadership potential.
Yeah.
And now you're stepping out of your comfortable. You're stepping out of your.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've stepped out of everything comfortable in my entire life, right? And so now I'm like, I'm stepping away from Lyft, which is completely comfortable. And I love it. And I love my women. I have a passion for women and serving them and leading them. And I said, but this is not my time to continue to do this. Like, he wants me to step away. He wasn't calling me away. He was calling me into this place. Mm-hmm. And so I said, we've got women that we've been discipling and leading, and we can form a team. We can create a team. And so we tapped into several women and we called them together. And I said, this is what's happening. And God has called me into this place for this season. And I would like for you all to step into this place for this season and be willing to teach and lead and minister. And they all agreed. And so we created this Lyft leadership team. And it has been incredible. It's been incredible. They have led, we're literally coming straight from scripture, just one book at a time. They're in James right now, finishing up James. One of the things that we do with Lyft that's really important to us is that we have a mission that we do every single month. And so we are out serving in the community some way, somehow, every single month. That's continued. It's really new women have come in without me being there. And so there was like a fear that people would step away and not come because I wasn't there.
Because you are magnetic.
And you know.
You are.
I think that for me, it's like, it's hard for me to say, you know, God has gifted me in certain ways. And I want to use that to honor him and to bless bless these women and to bless the youth, like whoever I'm working with. One of my pastors, Pastor Jesse, said, Debbie, when God's gifted you, it's healthy to recognize how he's gifted you.
Lean in.
And you lean into that and you allow him to work through you in that giftedness. It's when you take it upon yourself that it all goes wrong, right? And in my 30s, I experienced that. I could do these things in my own power, but the fruit isn't there in your own power, right? And so when I lean into what he's called me to do and how he's called me to do it, he's being glorified in that when he is the focus and he's the reason, not for anything for myself. And so there was a transition. I mean, a lot of insecurities popped up when I stepped into this new season. There were insecurities that popped up. Like, what if they don't want me back? Mm-hmm. What if, you know, it's way better than it was when I was there? And what if they don't like me anymore? Like all these weird insecurities that I just hadn't dealt with in my 50s, you know? But I, as they came up, I just continued to give them to God. What I found is that truly as women in ministry, we should be rooting for one another. We should want it. I should want that to be better than it's ever been. I should want them to shine the light of Jesus to these women in this room and have more women come because of that. Like that, I think, is the key to like good, healthy women's ministry, is that we're rooting for them and we want to see that to be successful.
And I had not heard your hog story. So the fact that I'm having a moment over here, the fact that you and I had a conversation, and I'll never forget it. We were in the coffee shop and the lights kept dimming.
Yes.
And we were laughing.
Were
like,
they kicking you out?
No. We kept thinking, is that a sign? Okay, like, God, we were laughing.
Yes. I was like, that's the Holy Spirit.
We were having some weird God moments.
Yes.
And we were having a conversation about the fact that you have the ability to be a gatekeeper, mm-hmm. and the fact that they ask you to be the gate woman for the hog.
For the hog.
It's kind of funny. But I was saying how proud I was that you mm-hmm. were tapping into other women.
Yeah.
Because you very much have the leadership mm-hmm. where you could be the crab in someone else's bucket, mm-hmm. but you're lifting yeah. other women mm-hmm. higher and yeah. you're tapping into their potential. Yeah. And we were just talking about how people in various realms or in various roles mm-hmm. can be gatekeepers yes. who block other people's blessings.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's big.
Yes.
It was such a big thing for you to share that with me. I hadn't thought about it like that. And I really walked away from that conversation thinking, I don't want to be a gatekeeper that blocks those blessings from the women that are serving, but the women that are receiving as well. And I'm always mindful of that. You know, you can't disciple if you're not if you're not willing to release control. Right. So you're discipling, you're growing together, and you have to be willing to share those responsibilities. And so collaboration, right? And sharing the responsibilities, sharing the joy of the ministry with one another, building each other up, encouraging them, understanding, you know, who has what, like, what are you gifted at? What are you gifted at? Because there's lots of things that we can do. And so I think that was really what I think stepping into this season of what I called rest in this small group really kind of unleashed all these other things that if I had held on to it, wouldn't be happening. So it's been a really good journey these last several months. And I say rest, you know, I stepped into this space, this small group. So mind you, I went from our small group, life group that would have 40, 50, sometimes 60 women in it,
wow,
to a small group of 11. And it was, I went in there and I was like, I'm not going to talk. I'm not going to share. I'm just going to listen. I'm going to soak it all in. And the first session, I literally was like sitting on my hands, like, I'm not going to answer these questions. I'm not going to talk too much. And because I need to listen. Mm-hmm. And so he asked, Pastor Brad asked a question and I answered it. And I was so proud of myself. I got to the end of the session and everybody was leaving. And I said, Brad, didn't I do good? I didn't talk. Like, I try not to talk very much. He's like, well, in the beginning you kind of did, but then you were like, you settled down.
Yeah,
like,
you could do better.
You settled down.
Really? Really? It was so, well, in the beginning. But it was so funny because when you go from being the one that's doing all the talking, mm-hmm, to you're in a circle of 11 people and you don't want to be doing all the talking. Mm-hmm. So really, it was like in James, right? Like, slow to speak, quick to listen. And so,
dang it.
Oh, man. He was working. He was working on
right.
me. But even now, like, after, there's some things that we do in our small group. And so we share our stories. And after we share our story, somebody in the group will pray for that person specifically after they shared their story. And so nobody was volunteering. And he's like, so would somebody like to pray? And he's like looking at me. And I was like,
nope.
I'm not supposed to be talking a lot.
Right. You told me to be.
But I will pray.
Yeah. This is my season of listening.
Yes. Yes. But you know what? The season of listening has brought me in a space that's really intimate with God. And so when you're busy, 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 even in ministry, talking, 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 you can drown out what God's trying to tell you with your own voice, mm, and your own ideas and what you think he is telling you instead of listening to what he is telling you. And so this has been a seasoning of listening. So August to current, mm-hmm, a season of listening. And I think it's been really healthy for me. It's been real healthy for me. So I encourage people to do that.
Mm-hmm. I love that you're using the term season too, because I always think of in this season, and you know, my children play every sport. So I'm always thinking sports season, but also weather, but really life, yeah, seasons.
Yes.
You know, in this season,
yeah,
this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it can look different, mm-hmm, you know, for all of us. And, you know, I think too, like, sometimes we get caught up in, well, she's in her 30s and she's in her 40s and she's in her 50s or she's in her 20s, mm-hmm, or, you know, she's in her 70s.
She doesn't even know.
She doesn't know. Or it's been so long. What do they know? Right.
Yeah.
One of the things I think that has been beautiful about LIFT and our women's ministry in general, because a lot of our women's groups, life groups that meet at Timberlake are multi-generational. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is that you can be in different seasons of life, like by your age, but you can be in the same seasons of life spiritually. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really powerful.
You can be in your wilderness.
Yeah.
Or your Egypt or, yeah, your whatever it is.
Yes. At the same time as maybe someone that's sitting next to you that's in a, maybe they're raising babies, mm-hmm, and you've already raised your babies, but you're in the wilderness together. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the power of community, right? That we walk together in that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a powerful thing.
It is.
Hey, Hey friends, let's talk about real impact. Imagine a single mom struggling to keep her family together or a child sleeping on the floor because they don't have a bed. Now imagine you being able to meet that need. That's exactly what happens every day through Care Portal.
Care Portal is a platform that connects real-time needs from local children and families to people like you, churches and individuals who want to make a difference. With just a few clicks, you can step in, meet a need, and build a meaningful connection that changes lives.
This isn't just charity. It's the church and the community coming together, showing up in love and action. So if you're ready to turn compassion into action, visit careportal.org and see how you can be a part of the movement, because connection changes everything.
Visit careportal.org for more information on how to sign up and start meeting the needs of children and families in your own zip code. Once again, that's careportal.org.
Thank you, Care Portal, for sponsoring the Mended Futures podcast.
So do you feel like, you know, we have the question on here, do you have any advice for people who work in ministry, specifically women in ministry? Would you say it's the rest component?
Yeah, I would say rest. I would say one of the very specific things I would say is you need to collaborate. It can't just be you.
The team.
You need a team, and you need other women because you need each other. But there's wisdom in that, right? And so when you build a ministry on one person, it's very easy for that person, one, to be they're the central person, and then they become the central person, not God, not what we're doing this for, right?
And maybe they don't even want to be
and
that.
Maybe
so think about pastors in the pulpit.
Yes.
Think of leaders of nonprofits.
Yes.
Think about educators. Oftentimes, you don't necessarily want that, but it happens.
It happens. And it's not the healthy way to lead. It isn't for anybody. I think that by far, I would say, you know, tapping into others that have the ability to lead with you and to serve with you. And don't look for just certain qualities either. Like, it should be, people are all different. And so when you look at my team that we all work together, we're all different, very different. Not everyone is not like super extroverted. You know, we have some introverts in that group.
Talk a little bit about the difference between you and May. So your best friend is May.
Yes, we're Mary and Martha. Mm-hmm. So, she is the worker bee. She is doing. She is making sure things are getting done. And so we always joke that I'm always like, I'm talking and she's over here, you know, wiping the counters down, pouring coffee for people. It was really funny because she did one of the spiritual gift tests and she took it like 3 times because it kept telling her exactly what her gifts were.
She didn't want that to be her gift.
She didn't want that to be
I
her
don't
gift.
Receive this.
No, thank you.
I don't
She's
receive
like,
it.
I'm going to do this again. You know? And I'm like, you know.
No, thanks.
It is just a fact that we are Mary and Martha, you know. But one of the things that I think has been really cool about that is that I have learned so much from her about how to serve people in a practical way, right? And she has learned from me how to just like talk and just the compassion, but the love, like the hospitality, loving component of that. We've both influenced each other. Mm-hmm. And so I think that she still is a workhorse, man. She still will outwork me in a minute. Like, she's just incredible like that. But she has this incredible heart that loves people. And she sees, I feel like she can see exactly what somebody needs before anybody else does. Mm. That's her gift.
And I would say you have shepherded, and I love that you used that term a little while ago, you have shepherded a mutually beneficial situation amongst the leaders, amongst the multiple generations in your Lyft group that you are pouring into each other. Mm-hmm. So for many years, you poured a lot. Yeah. You probably poured first.
Yeah.
How have they poured into you recently?
That's a great question. First of all, I will tell you, there was zero hesitation when I said, I need to step into this with Brad.
So there wasn't like gnashing of teeth or no. They weren't begging you?
No, they were like,
okay, go.
Oh, thank the Lord.
Thank you, Brad.
Get out of here. Thanks, Brad.
Go on now, get.
Brad, your bonus will be in your mailbox now. They said, you need this. They said, you need this. They really poured into me prior to this decision anyway, just with taking care of me with, you know, my breast cancer diagnosis, all of my surgeries, taking care of me and just really loving me in a very, like, God loves us lavishly through other people. So when somebody was bringing me that meal, it wasn't that they were just feeding my belly, like they were feeding my soul, mm-hmm. and they were doing the work that God had called them to do, right? Loving others. And so when we love others, they experience the love of God mm-hmm. through that. And so that's how they've been to me. And so in this season, you know, taking on full responsibility for Lyft and encouraging me to fully, like, just be in that space where God's called me to be and not feel conflicted about that. We pray for each other daily. We have a very tight-knit group. Recently, we've been fasting and praying together. That's really pouring into me. And I can pour into them in that way. But I think that they've just really taken good care of me and poured into me by giving me the space and the time to be able to rest. And resting in God isn't like laying on the couch and doing nothing. It's like, I call it active rest. Mm-hmm. It's following what He wants me to do right now. And so they've been so good to me in this place. Really good to me. Very thankful for them.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, thanks.
So you touched a little bit earlier on sort of the mended futures mm-hmm. idea. Are there any other ways that you see yourself as the product of a mended future?
Oh, well, you know, I mentioned my parents' divorce. That was pretty big for me. You know, growing up, you know, there wasn't really any signs that there was anything going on in our family. Mm. And so Dad worked late a lot, but, you know, all of a sudden life literally flipped upside down. And so I went from a student, like honor roll student. I was trained as a classical ballet dancer.
Wow.
I had danced with the Joffrey Ballet and I had danced with the New York City Ballet at the Kennedy Center, like auditioned and got parts and did this.
Wow.
And I was in middle school doing that. I had won a scholarship to Stuttgart Ballet in Germany. I was 12. Mm-hmm. My teacher wanted me to go over there. Of course, my parents were like, she's too young. So I was wholly focused on that. And so when my family just kind of flipped upside down, the only way that I knew to just kind of get back at my parents was to just basically, I started cutting class, didn't go to school. Mm-hmm. I quit ballet. Like everything that was important to me, mm-hmm. I just literally kicked rocks.
It was a roundabout way to try and take back control.
Yes.
Cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Mm. Yes. And one of the things I think, you know, there was just such deep pain and hurt and abandonment during that time of my life. And so I knew in the back of my mind, I was like, when I get married, I will never get divorced. Like, I'll never get divorced. And of course, we know that's not always how it is. Mm-hmm. But in the back of my mind, I was like, that's how I'm going to make it, mm-hmm. right? And so my husband and I met in high school. My parents pulled me out of the public school that I was in after one semester. I only made it one semester in ninth grade because I was a train wreck. Mm-hmm. And they put me in this private Christian school. keep in mind, we had never gone to church. Like, we never went to church or anything. Hmm. And it was a friend of my mom's that she worked with that said, put her at this school.
Like punishment?
Like, no, like, you need to save her. Okay. She's going to end up in drugs or something. Yes. Yeah. Like, I think my story would have been totally different if my parents hadn't done that. Mm. And so they put me in this Christian academy that was like fundamental, Baptist, independent, I mean, strict. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I met my husband. Ken and I started dating in high school. And when we got married, we were young, we were 20 when we got married. And I think for me, God started mending my future through these teachers at that school that started investing their time and their emotions like with me and led me to Christ. And I was on this new path, new life, right? And so didn't mean I wasn't still making some bad choices and making mistakes as a teen, because you do. But when Ken and I got married, we got married young, we committed ourselves to God first and then to each other. We made a covenant. And one of the things that I really, was really important to me was to do what we could to keep our family healthy. And didn't mean that we didn't have bumps in the road and times that were hard that we were like, oh my gosh, I cannot. And there weren't not to say that there weren't times that maybe I would have thrown in the towel had it not been for my commitment to God first. And so I think that really, for me, it started with those relationships with those teachers, mm-hmm. moving forward, and then committing in my own life, as my own self, but then in my marriage and my husband being completely committed to the health of our family and to the health of our children, to try to do everything that we could so that my kids didn't experience that hurt and brokenness that I experienced. So I think that was, you know, what I did on that path. Was I perfect in that? No. But I, and then taking that personal experience and carrying that into my career, mm-hmm. and how I use that experience of my own to help the youth that I serve and love mend themselves. Mm-hmm. So
one of our earlier guests talked about ministry outside of the church. Mm-hmm. And as you're talking about that, I think that many helpers, wherever you are along the river, mm-hmm. are ministering,
yes.
outside of the church.
Yeah.
And I know that that's an emphasis at Timberlake, where yes. you attend right now, that really being the hands and the feet and being, yes. being the church outside of the church.
Absolutely. So reach, feed, and release. That's our mission for mm-hmm. Timberlake Church. And I believe that we do that. And we do that in lots of ways in the community. There's a sign as you leave our parking lot.
I love that sign.
You're entering the mission field.
Uh-huh.
Because that's where the work is to mm-hmm. be done, right? And I've always considered, somebody said to me one time, like, why aren't you teaching in a Christian school? And I said, because I wasn't called there. Mm-hmm. I was called here. And, you know, if I had been called there, I would be there. But that's mm-hmm. not where God called me. And so this is my mission. Like, this is my work for the Lord, mm-hmm. is in that classroom every day. Now, the work for the Lord that I do is with 4-H and with these youth that I'm working with, whether in the classroom or in my clubs, whether in a hog pen mm-hmm. or at a horse show. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's because that's what the Great Commission is, to go, mm-hmm. right, and to tell people about Jesus. And I can tell people about Jesus by the way I live my life, how I treat them,
how I love them,
how I make them feel. I always keep in mind, you know, do I want to I don't want anyone to walk away from me having to repair harm that I've brought to them. Mm-hmm. I want them to walk away thinking, man, she authentically loves me. Mm-hmm. Like, she really does care. Mm-hmm. And I want them to see Christ in me. And so I'm very aware of that when I'm dealing with any kind of situations with anybody. Doesn't matter if it's at the store or on my job, right? Mm-hmm. At church. I'm very aware of that. So, yeah.
It's powerful.
I have a question because you're going to have a lot of folks listening right now, hearing about the women's ministry mm-hmm. and thinking about, you know, whether you're thinking about where are you on the river or where are you in the village. Mm-hmm. If they don't feel like they belong, what sort of advice would you give women who are searching for a place to belong?
Well, first of all, I would tell any woman that you have to understand, like, first find the belonging with Christ and that you have a place there. So you're not alone in that sense spiritually, but there are times that you feel alone as like a person. And for women, I think that's really hard to make connections. It can be very intimidating trying to find a place like as a woman. And especially, I know I've talked to a lot of women like that are single moms mm-hmm. and walking into a church is very intimidating.
Maybe judgy.
And judgy. And it's not exactly set up to be welcoming because everything is family oriented, mm-hmm. you know. What I tell that woman is find that person. There is a person there that you can connect with. And I always tell someone, I'm like, look for the person that has the biggest smile on their face and is warm when they meet you. Mm-hmm. And spend just even 25, 30 seconds talking to them. It'll help you with that connection. But what I tell, I wish that a woman that feels like that could come into a room that I'm in mm-hmm. because I am very intentional about connecting with every person that walks into a room, like with women's ministry for me, if they're new. The other thing I would tell them, it's hard if it's not you being able to like sit mm-hmm. and talk to them, but this is what I would say. If you're going into something new, a new place, reach out to somebody that's in that group. Mm. And so I've had several women that have emailed me and said, thinking about coming to Lyft, but I don't know.
What do I wear? What do I do? What door do I use?
Yeah. Like, what can you tell me more about it? And then it opens the door for me to say, what time are you coming? Mm-hmm. I'll meet you at the front and I will be there for you. And I go and I meet them and I bring them in and then I'm introducing them. I have them sit with me, or if they can't sit with me that night because of whatever I'm doing, I put them with somebody that I know mm-hmm. will be good to them and welcoming and warm to them. And so my advice would be, if you're going into a new situation that you don't know and you want to try something new, is reach out to somebody that's already in that group or the leader of that group and tell them, I'm coming. Mm-hmm. I'm nervous. You don't even have to say you're nervous. I'm coming. What do I need to do? Where do I need to come?
And I'm just thinking on the flip side, if you're a part of a mm-hmm. group, mm-hmm. be the person who feels like sunshine. Yes. Be the person who is warm. Yes. Look for the folks who may not have the connection. Yes. And we are such social beings mm-hmm. that all you really need to do is extend a warm invitation. Would you like to come with me?
Yes, that's it. That's it. So we have Women in Worship next Friday night at Timberlake. Doors open at 6. Worship is at 7 for women. Last year we had 400 women come that night. And so one of the things that I share with other women is that you don't know who might need that night. Mm-hmm. And it can be life-changing for them in lots of ways that we don't even know. Mm-hmm. And so you ask somebody, like, would you want to come with me to this? I'll pick you up. Mm-hmm. They're feeding us dinner. It's an incredible night. You don't want to miss it. But I'll pick you up so you don't have to walk in by yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if all of us did that, can you imagine if every woman extended that hand of hospitality and friendship and just warmth and compassion to another woman? How life-changing could that be in ministry, in our community, for families? Mm-hmm. I just, the ripple effect would be just incredible. Mm-hmm. So I would say if you're looking for that place, reach out and ask. And you can do it through email mm-hmm. if you're uncomfortable calling somebody.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Is there anything that we didn't ask you that you would like to share?
Well, I want to tell you, Women in Worship. So this is a cool story. So we have a mission focus for our event every year. And so first year was Isaiah 117 House. Second year, we did Freedom 424. Last year, we did Craveables. And so this year, we're like, let's start praying. We start praying as a committee. And so, you know, what direction do we think God was taking us in? And so Kathy Presley is our mission lead for this event. And she said, well, my friend Yolan sits on the board of 518 Family Services. Maybe we should schedule a meeting and see what they have. Like, what are they about? What are they doing? And so May and I said, we'll set the meeting up and we will we'll meet and see, you know, what we can learn about this organization, see if this will be the mission for our Women in Worship night. So we go to Kathy's house and we meet, and Jeff is there, and he tells us the story, tells his story. And we're sitting at the table, and he gives us one of the cards for 518. And right in on that card, the Tree of Life is on the card mm-hmm. in that logo. And I looked at it, and I looked at May, and I was like, so our theme is rooted in Christ, and we're using the Tree of Life in our cool. logo this year. And I was like, the logo's right. And then
is this a sign?
And then there are like these hands, you know, that are crossed mm-hmm. over. And I'm like, yeah, it's reach, feed, and release. And like, we use those hands sometimes mm-hmm. in our thing. And I was like, this is totally like, this mm-hmm. could be, I think this is it. Mm-hmm. And so we had to take it to the whole committee. And then we find out that she's doing consulting. And she's like, I do the podcast with 518, and we were like, what?
And that was the meeting that the lights started flickering.
Oh my God. It was so mm-hmm. like supernaturally. God mm-hmm. is crazy, mm-hmm. isn't he? Mm-hmm. And it's awesome crazy.
And like, just pay attention.
Cool when he makes things obvious.
It's so awesome.
Just pay attention.
He's so awesome. Mm-hmm. And so so we chose 518 Family Services to be our mission
That's
for
amazing.
Our night next
Thank
week.
Thank you. That's so
and
cool.
And we are so excited about it. And you know, he is the first man to come and actually speak from the pulpit in this event, because everything's
be
women except for our band. Our guys are, they do the band, but we have worship is led by women. We have a 30 women choir in our worship choir.
Wow.
It is so powerful. And so he's going to be sharing the mission of 518 next Friday night. And then we'll take up a special offering that comes to y'all. And so we're so excited to see what God's going to do through this.
That's so cool.
So excited. So yeah.
Wow.
God has really orchestrated all of this. So mm-hmm. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah.
Be a part of this. Okay. This is my first podcast.
You wouldn't know.
I know.
You're a natural.
I think you passed. I think
thanks.
You passed the test.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you, guys. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you for listening to the Mended Futures podcast, hosted by Allison Jordan and Taylor Melvin, produced by Liam Chafin, Sue England, Allison Jordan, Robert Day, Sully Jugar, and Taylor Melvin. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to like, share, and subscribe to see more.